Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He's got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carry Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Here we go. Time for Jaguars This Week on a Wednesday evening. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Loggam and John Osher has just checked in from the Jaguars.com Nerve Center right down the hallway.
Yeah, from the track. I saw John out there running, and I started to hurt just watching John run.
Do you? I was too.
Do you run at all, Locks?
No, I can't.
How is it that you stay in such good shape then?
Low impact, zero impact, you know, stuff, you know, the bike,
elliptical, I know you
runner, Stairmaster.
Okay.
But I can't run. I mean, I can, but for days afterwards, I'm pretty much put up on the shelf.
Right.
And
it's
two of us on the show who can't run.
But can you eat like this man eats?
No.
Just wait till the first road trip this year. You're our guest.
I've been pretty good lately. You know, I'm down below 230 pounds now, man.
Was the last time you were that low?
Yeah.
High school? Fifth grade?
No, high school. I think the heaviest I ever, you know, playing weight was about 205.
Okay.
215, you know, somewhere in that range. And then, you know, early on when I was in college, I think when I got to college, I think I finally got up to 225 and thought that I was Herculean. I mean, I thought I was big. I really did. I mean, that's crazy. Now I'm, you know, 228, 230, somewhere right in there, you know.
Feel good at that weight?
Yeah, I feel good. I don't feel like I can move buildings anymore, yeah. but I don't have to.
I'm just asking because I'm looking at the quarterback's taste like chicken ad that's up now.
Oh, is it back up?
Yep. Hasn't been on the – what was
best that? Billboard that's ever been on that on that scoreboard.
If you don't remember, if you're too young, what was that, 97? Or was it 96?
No, I think it was up in 95, wasn't it, John?
It was one of the first 2 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, 95, 96, something like that.
Jeff in a tri panel up there at the back of the scoreboard with quarterbacks taste like chicken. Nike's a logo,
yeah.
Which tells you it's been a long time since Nike had the NFL deal.
Yeah, and I guess that I had a billboard, too, I think, at one time.
Here in town?
Yeah, those that wear this cloth shall possess the strength of Loggaman or something like that. And I still have a picture, and that billboard I think was on 95 or I-10. There was like two of them, I think, and it was another, I think, a Nike ad.
Was that a lucrative ad for you?
I tried to transition that and parlay that into a career in modeling, and it just didn't work.
So you ended up in radio, which just fits.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so here we are.
Radio.
Yeah, here we are, Jaguars This Week. Got a full house tonight. You can join us, 355-NFL-1. I dare say there is – we've gone from guarded optimism about a deal to almost downright certain that there's going to be something to be voted on next week when the owners meet.
Yeah, and see, I'm not buying it yet. I'm just not buying it yet. I mean – they still haven't settled, I guess, the issue of the revenue split.
Right.
That's the issue that has been lingering throughout the offseason. And until you can kind of settle in on a number for the revenue split, how can you say that they say that they're close, or the experts say that they're close? To me, I mean, the deal could fall apart because, I mean, that is the primary argument. And you know, they're talking about other issues while they're still trying to accomplish this, you know, so-called revenue split. But
well, you had Drew Brees. Did you read Drew Brees' comments?
Yeah,
I'm sure you did.
I saw his comment that
he's
he was talking about, hey, I'm going to go to New York possibly next week. And then I guess there was a statement released by the quarterbacks, and that was Manning, Brees, and also Tom Brady, that, hey, we're close. It's time to go ahead and get a deal done. And Brees was the one who came out and said we're very close to the deal. Well, no, you're not. You know, you're not close until, you know, you're about ready to sign the papers. And until you can get resolved on the big issue, the split, you're not close, in my opinion.
Okay. And you have been the sunshine optimist throughout this whole lockout, since you got here at least. So where do you see it now based on, you know, who you've talked to and what you've seen?
Well, I kind of prefer to think of myself as more of a realist. That I just think there's – I don't disagree with Jeff that – I don't think this thing is a done deal in terms of getting it done in the next day or two, the next week. I still just I said all along, I do not think they'll miss regular season games.
Okay.
And I still don't think that's very in jeopardy. You know, it would be hard for me to picture at this point, with all the optimistic talk, them missing regular season games. Could there be a hiccup and have, you know, a couple of preseason games missed and have a lot of drama and have a lot of pro football talk banter back and forth? Sure, but I still believe there's too much to, for the first time, there's too much to lose on both sides for, you know, if they lose games.
Well, keep in mind, they don't move preseason games. They cancel them. And it's $200 million a week, roughly,
well,
in preseason money.
And you alluded to what Drew Brees said. And here's what Drew Brees said, and it was on a sports radio talk show in San Diego. He said, quote, "We're at that point in the negotiations where there's just a few more details that need to be ironed out. Obviously, there's a big sense of urgency. I think we're all optimistic and hoping we can finalize a deal for that time." And what he's talking about is the time was the owner's meeting is July 21st. And so the rumors and the speculation is that they can get a deal done prior to that so that the owners can go ahead and sign off, ratify whatever it is that they have to do. And then in the meantime, the players will have to do that. But, you know, the one thing that I am not real educated on is that you still have pending court issues that are still hanging out there.
Right, the lawsuits.
If you do, in fact, come to an agreement on how you're going to go forward, what has to happen with the courts as far as the time frame in order to say, hey, okay, here's the date in which free agency starts, here's the date we're starting camp, you know, here's what, you know, we're going to do.
Well, you could settle those, right? As part of the agreement, those lawsuits could
be
dismissed.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the question that I don't know, and there hasn't been a whole lot of answers. But I mean, the courts have to sign off.
Right.
So how long does that take? How long will it take the players to agree? But I don't know if the players as a body have to agree because they're not a union, right?
Right.
They're not even an
association.
Is it just
a class deal? And then the other question that I don't know the answer to, with the retired players kind of somewhat throwing a wrench in last week with
the Carl Eller group.
Yeah, the Carl Eller group posted a notice or whatever it was to the court, and that they wanted to make sure that they were represented. Does that impact this? I mean, there's a lot of questions that are still out there. Very complicated.
Right.
I mean, the legalese is always complicated.
Well, and if they do get this done and ratified next week, they're still going to open training camp on time.
Well, they've been talking about, you know, they haven't decided to do anything with the Hall of Fame game. The Hall of Fame game is gone. There's no way that two teams can get everything together in time to have the Hall of Fame game. So stop saying that we're not sure about it. I mean, that's gone. I think that right now, I mean, you're looking at possibly having the start delayed of training camp. The people now that are saying, well, you know, we're going to start training camp on time, I don't necessarily think that that's true. I don't think they can do that. I mean, if they're talking about having this deal ratified by the 21st, you're going to have free agency, sign all your rookies and everything else in a window about this big?
Well, no. You're going to have to go through that process, it would seem, while training camp is ongoing. You know, training camp starts because you take your roster.
That would be interesting.
I think it'd be really – because think about it like this, Logs. Think if you got a linebacker, right?
Man, I'd schedule about 6 or 7 visits to just miss training camp if I was a free agent.
Well, here's what's likely to happen. Say you got a defensive end who's spent 6 years in one market, and he's got a little history of shoulder or ankle or knee. You'd like to bring him in, talk to him, right, and have your medical staff look at him. And then you'd like to make an offer that you could negotiate on. In other words, not your best offer right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. What you're going to have, because people are going to try to spend money and get it done fast, is you're going to have teams take calculated risks. And they're going to say, hey, Jeff, how's the shoulder? How's the knee? How's the ankle? How does this amount of money sound? Great. Yeah, we'll take it. All right, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, we need you to get down here. And that's the kind of – that's the environment. The risk is now coming big time. Gene and his group over there and Wayne, they're just going to have to take calculated risks. It's going to be a very – tumultuous process.
Yeah, and I saw somewhere, and I don't remember exactly where it was, and I think it was in you know, Ryan Robinson, the Jaguars PR guru, sends out daily clips every day. And of course, I read them all. And one of the stories had a quote from a retired executive, and he said, this is, you know, at this point, you know, where we're at and with the windows that we're dealing with, this is where you're going to really see a separation in talent with the general managers. And we had alluded to that.
I absolutely agree with that.
A few weeks ago, and that, you know, the Jaguars are very fortunate to have Gene Smith, who's prepared for anything and everything.
Yes.
And there are some GM and executives that will not be prepared for what's going to happen once this thing is settled. And it will settle, but we just don't know when. Right. So to me, that's there's going to be a lot of curiosity to me when this process finally kicks off, and to see what certain executive GMs do in this window, because some people can't make decisions quickly.
Right.
And I'm not knocking Tom Coughlin, but Tom is one of those guys who really needs to kind of think on something and to really get a feel for it. And there are some that make decisions off the cuff, and they usually don't turn out very good. The Redskins were the perfect example of that for years. You know, so it will be very interesting to watch, and that's why I said last week, you know, don't, you know, just make sure that you've got all the alerts on your phone and everything, because for those that are fans of the NFL, the transactions are going to be fast and furious, and they're going to be interesting to follow.
And don't you think, and from what little you've been around him, that Gene has a scenario for every one of them? If they have a 6-year, a 5-year, a 4-year plan for guys to get free agency.
To give you an example, I've been trying to get Gene to go fishing all summer. What's he been doing?
Right.
I can't get him on the boat. And the reason why is that, you know, every time the week changes by window, you know what he's doing?
He's narrowing it down.
I don't know this, but I'm sure that this is the case. He's changing his philosophy and getting prepared for, okay, we just lost a week. We're changing our game plan. Here's how we're going to do it now.
Right. There's no doubt.
That's how he is.
He will be ready.
You brought up the Redskins earlier, Jet. And when there was a work stoppage in 82 and 87, I was not covering the league. But everything you heard, I grew up a Redskins fan. I was following the team. And you always heard that Joe Gibbs and Bobby Bethard together were one of the best organized teams in the NFL. They were one of the best front offices, one of the best coaching staffs, were always prepared. They were the team that won the Super Bowl in 82 and 87 when there was chaos.
Mm-hmm.
The best organizations will thrive compared to the others in this environment. I don't think anybody wants this, but the ones that are prepared, the ones with the best plan of action, who are best able to communicate between front office and coaching staff and players and get messages out, you know, those will be the teams that excel.
Well, and just like we had said a long time ago, you know, there was so much debate and, you know, what Wayne Weaver should do at the conclusion of the 2010 season. And we said, hey, you know, with what's going on, we said this a couple months ago, very smart move to not make change. And so here's a team and the Jaguars that has its staff intact, that has their personnel people intact, that has their quarterback, you know, ready to rock and roll with a developmental guy, you know, kind of in the wings. This team should fare very well in this environment that's going to be, you know, pretty much put in front of the 32 teams.
I spoke with Dirk Koetter a couple weeks ago, and he sort of made that point of, you know, David Garrard is a veteran quarterback, knows this system. There are a lot worse situations to be in than having a guy who knows what he's doing in this environment.
We need a break. We'll take it now. Come back. More Jaguars this week with John Osher, Jeff Loggeman, and you. 355-NFL1 or Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. Back after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, rolling towards the bottom of the hour. We've got a short segment here since we went long in our opener. And we'll take a break for news here in a couple of minutes. Any cleanup thoughts from the entire labor discussion? Or, you know, depends on who you listen to, but there's some thought that they could get something to talk about by Sunday.
I mean, you know, Jeff and I sort of disagree. I just believe it's going to happen, and I've thought all along. To me, it's just sort of playing out the way that I optimistically thought it would. And
Loggy, in terms of getting ready to open camp in a week's time, from a player perspective, You guys used to do that because you didn't have the off-season program.
Yeah.
Do you see any real negative to some of these guys coming back and jumping right into the fire?
Because
they probably work to stay in shape to some
degree. Well, I mean, you're going to have it just like you did years ago. I mean, you have some guys that that worked out very well on their own. I think for the veteran guys, that this off-season the way it's been may be good for them and that they haven't had to go through a structured grind of OTAs and mini camps and workouts to where they've probably allowed their joints and their bodies to recuperate more so than that they had been under the old way, I guess you could say. For the young players, I think a lot of them have missed a lot of stuff that they could have become better players with, you know, and that, you know, but that's part of the deal, you know. Is 14 OTAs and a mini camp going to make the difference between a guy's ability, you know, to perform at this level? And is it going to be that drastic? No. I mean, you know. But, you know, I go back to the saying is that, you know, football is not rocket science, but it is to some, and that, you know, some guys need those OTAs.
Right.
You know, some guys need that to learn. You know, and from the Jaguars' standpoint, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you know, the one person that, you know, I really wish had an OTA, had an offseason to really work with players is Mel Tucker. You know, he's going to be the guy on defense going into 2011. You know, he's going to be calling the shots. You know, Jack said he's going to, you know, step down kind of from that role. Mel's going to be handling it. And I think it would have helped Mel, and I think it would have certainly helped the defense to let the personalities kind of gel. And that won't help a whole lot. Now, offensively, with Dirk Cutter, you still have a new quarterback's coach.
Your wide receiver's coach.
Still have a new wide receiver's coach. But the adjustment there I don't think will be that great. But there was some adjustment that you could have certainly accelerated on that you missed out on. But you can, with two coaches on an offensive staff, but to me I think really the dynamic on defense is really needed that time.
Right.
You just kind of think, too, that, and Jeff sort of alluded to it earlier, those teams that hired new coaches, new staffs, new philosophies, I just don't see any way in the world they're not behind.
Oh, and they're going to be behind, no doubt.
You know, it would be interesting to see. It would be very interesting to be covering a team such as the Titans, you know, one of these teams that brought in a new coach and is really drastically changing things.
And now it has to have a new quarterback since Kerry Collins retired.
Well, they may not change things so drastically because at least some of the terminology from what I understand is going to be similar. So it will be familiar.
And he's familiar with the players. I mean,
but for
he does know.
Carolina,
sure.
That, you know, Panthers that have a new quarterback, an entirely new verbiage on offense and defense.
Totally new coaching.
Holy cow.
And doesn't even know the veterans. Doesn't even know the guys. I mean, that's just
they're not even going to be teaching technique so much as they are
shaking hands.
Alignment, assignment, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
And that's what it's right. A lot of the coaching is going to be early on, and then, you know, you kind of worry about the rest later on, you know. And they're going to be really educating more so than, I guess you could say, enhancing players.
Because they didn't even get that little – you guys used to get two mini camps, correct? If there was a new coach, or was that
new
rule
coach
put in after?
No. Before the CBA the way it is now, you had one, and then you were allowed an additional.
Right. If it was a new coach.
If it was a new right. coach, if I remember correctly, because I remember we had the change from Joe Walton to Bruce Coslett, and we were allowed a little extra. And at that point, there really were no rules about OTAs.
Right.
You know, so you did have certain get-togethers, you know, but at that point, I mean, a lot of the coaches, they didn't want to do it.
Right.
You know, they were like, you know, you guys go back to wherever you came from.
We'll
see you in July.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, but then when the CBA came about, then you had the 14, you were allowed 14 OTAs, and then you were allowed an additional, I think, one mini camp, and I think maybe even two. I don't remember.
If it was a new coach, I think you could have a second.
If it was new coach, you could get two, but if Del Rio had mini camp this year, he'd just get his one.
Right.
But the 14 OTAs. We are due for news here at the bottom of the hour. We'll continue the discussion and talk football with you when we return to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, here we go. 22 minutes left in our show, and I guess we now turn our attention
Well, before we do, you know what? And we've got our friend Johnny Dineen in here today. And I think Johnny put it best in that what is the most anticipated weigh-in for the Jacksonville Jaguars when the players finally do report?
There's no doubt. It's pod roast.
Right.
Terrence Knight.
At least one question a day.
Yeah.
In the Ozone. I mean,
oh, yeah?
I mean, it's hard to answer them because they say, what do you think pot roast is going to weigh? And I have no,
No one knows, and we've been around in the last couple
right.
of years.
I mean,
but, I mean, those are the kind of questions that, you know, that you're – I mean, I know a lot of the coaches, I'm sure, are sitting there going
– It's a topic.
They've got a guy, you know, they've got a guy in each of their groups that they're going, oh, man, we haven't seen so-and-so. We haven't seen, you know, John Doe for, you know, since they left at the end of the season. You know, what's he been doing? What's he weighing? Has he been working out, lifting? You know, they worry about every group has a guy for
right.
the most part.
Right.
You always have one. And it may be you worry only about something that's we wouldn't consider criminal, but something that's, you know, small. And there are some that you worry about is from a criminal standpoint, but there's not – I mean, this is a good guy roster here for the most part
right.
now, you know. But, I mean, there are teams that have coaches right now that are going, oh, my. What's he going to look like when he gets back? Is he going to look like those guys from that movie, The Hangover, or whatever it's called?
What was he? Was he 360, 365 last year when training camp opened? He was big.
No, he was more than that.
Oh, he was heavier than that even.
Oh, yeah.
But
if he was 365, I mean, you know, then I'm 285. He was,
wow.
Yeah, I really thought that last year that he probably was pushing 380, 375.
And what do you think his optimal weight is to be still dominant, still immovable, yet?
Sub 330, you know, 330 tops.
Okay.
You know, and I think, you know, they were talking about, oh, yeah, he got his weight down to, you know, manageable level. And then they listed him at, I think, 335 last year. Come on, coach. That wool over my eyes. Come on now. Get it out of here, you know. And people tell you, oh, yeah, his weight was good. And I'm like, what do you consider good? But I think he played a lot of the year last year at 350. And he can play at 350. But I think if he could play at 330, if he stayed in that 330, 325 range, you know, 325, 335, somewhere right in there, because, I mean, one meal could make 10 pounds of difference on him from one day to the next, then he would be a hell of a lot better player, and in particular a much better player as far as a pass rusher goes. He's got pass rush ability. I mean, there's no doubt that he's got pass rush ability because he's so powerful and he's pretty nifty with his hands. But he's got to have a little stamina and he's got to have a little giddy up in a step, and at 350, you don't have it.
You saw a guy in Indianapolis who had a really big butt, Corey Simon.
Yeah, Corey. I mean,
and he was a guy that kind of like Knight, there you too. Were always worried about.
Yeah, Corey was actually, when I covered him, he was there in 05, and that was really about it. He had some knee problems, and then him and management couldn't get along to go beyond 2005, but it was always – He had one really good season in 2005, and weight was always an issue. And then by 2006, he had a knee issue, and it was a whole medical thing. And, he didn't play after that. The guy who really had the issue up there was always Tarik Glenn, who was one of these guys. And it sounds like, Knighton's the same way, who Tarik could play with a lot of weight on him and play at a very high level, higher than most, even playing 40 or 50 pounds overweight. He would have been much better had he been – able to control the weight, but he could still play at a high level. And sometimes those guys, you know, they don't have the motivation to lose it because they can play in the NFL and play at a starting level, even though, and they just can't convince themselves to get down to that optimum weight and fulfill their potential. And it's, you know, it's too bad. But Tarik was a guy who could do it.
He was a good player.
You know, Ted Washington was the same kind of way. He could play at a enormous level.
Yeah, but
and still
but,
be effective.
But Ted was one of those guys that when he was that big, he still possessed abilities that nobody else even had.
Right, and that was sort of the way Tarik was. He had those feet. And, you know, I had the strength coach up there with somebody that I got to know a little bit. And, you know, Tarik, even playing at, you know, 350, 360, had feet
mm-hmm.
that shouldn't have been on an offensive tackle no matter what the weight. Just he was put on this earth to do that thing.
Hey, by the way, I wanted to commend John. John, you did a good article on things that you're most, I guess, anticipating for the opening of camp. Maurice, okay. What were the other ones that you – what were the other guys on the list?
They
had Maurice's knee.
Yeah, Maurice – well, there was some – you know, one of the stories was on the players that have to come back from injury. Maurice, Aaron.
Evan.
And De'Anthony Smith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that bunch that just needs to – you know, the Jaguars have a chance to be – any team depends on staying healthy. This team has three or four guys who you – if those guys aren't on the field all season – then you're going to need special performances from guys we aren't thinking about yet.
Yeah, and it was a very good article because, I mean, it was very true in that you know, you are anxious to see how Maurice Jones-Drew looks. You know, what really was wrong with the knee? What was really done with it?
Right.
Nobody seems to know. How will De'Anthony Smith recover from a catastrophic injury? And used to be career-ending, no question, and an Achilles, you know, tear. How will Eben Britton's shoulder be coming back? Will he further develop? I mean, there's right. a lot of things that, you know, you just can't wait to see the guys and
well,
see him in camp.
Those four guys are guys that, you know, from our conversations and from some conversations I've had with coaches and personnel people, that if they're on the field for 16 games, those are good, strong positions that can sort of play with any positions in the league. They can be as good as – and if you've got that kind of player playing the whole season and being productive, you know, then you're in good shape. But you're sort of teetering there, and any team is. You know, no team can take more than three or four of their core guys, you know, going down. Indy last year lost, you know, crucial guys that they couldn't play without, and they weren't special. And, that's – every team's got him. I think those four or five guys in the Jaguars, it's going to be fascinating to watch during camp. Are they back to what makes them special?
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw it, Brian. He had another list about the players needing to take the next step.
Right.
Outstanding. I mean, it was very good.
Let's cover that when we come back because we need a break. More to come. Jaguars This Week, one more segment presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, a little less than 10 minutes left in the show this evening. Sexton, Lagerman, Osher, Fortunato, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Back to the story before the break, and that was five who need to step their game up.
Yeah, and it was titled Five Who Must Keep Growing.
Step up is fine.
Yeah, and then, John, you numbered them. Are the numbers of any importance, or they're just no?
Not particularly. I mean, probably name recognition more than anything. Just, you know, guys that kind of come to mind first.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Tyson first just because, as we talked about during the break, you know, that rookie, when he's a top 10 pick, it's okay to play well for a rookie as a rookie when you're in that position. And then there's that second step where you know, when you're a top 10 pick, you're expected to be dominant or progressing toward dominance. And You know, the big thing is to be progressing toward a guy that, as we talked about, Jeff, offensive coordinators have to account for or you get beat. You know, that's what that top 10 pick on defense has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I've heard is that he, as a rookie, looked like a guy who was on his way to that, but has to keep going toward that.
Yeah, he's still got to grow. You know, he's still got to grow. Number two, Eugene Monroe, and I really agree with that because, you know, when you take a left tackle that high in the draft, and we're talking, what, top five?
He was eight.
Well, yeah. But he was a top five.
Should have been.
Many people thought
pick
he was top
the,
three.
Right.
So I say top five because he's a top five tackle.
Right.
He should be elite.
Right.
He got a lot better last year.
Right.
Was he elite? No.
And he could probably again, from what people tell me, could stay at the level he's at and be a long-time starter.
Yep, be a good starter.
But out of those top 10 picks, if your franchise is going to be among the top four or five in the league, which is what you're shooting for, or to be the best, these key positions that you draft that high, that you spend that kind of draft equity on, somebody has to be elite and be special to make the team special, and that's what you expect out of those level picks. In a year, we'll be saying the same thing about Blaine Gabbert. At some point, when you take these guys at that level, Jeff, you played against Pacelli when he came into the league, very clear very quickly that he was going to be special.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what you look for out of those premium picks. And around those kind of players, long-term success is built.
Yeah, I thought he made a tremendous jump last year, you know, as far as the way he prepared, the way he finished plays. But he's not where he needs to be yet. And he's not a guy that no matter, you know, the truly great tackles are the ones that a coach says, I don't care who he has to block.
Right.
We're sliding everything away from him because he can handle it.
Right.
And with Eugene, you haven't reached that point yet.
Right.
And so he's got some steps to make. Jason Hill, I thought you were right on the money because, I mean, this team really needs a home run threat. And Mike Thomas, yes, he runs 4-4 or whatever. But does he really look like a down-the-field burning type of guy? Not to me, and I think that guy's got to be Jason Hill, and you got to have a vertical threat. It always makes the quarterback better, and I think that he can emerge into that because he made some plays last year that just made me go, wow. But can he do it being the man, and can he do it consistently? Good choice there.
He may be the most intriguing guy going into training camp. Some fans – while they write in and ask me, what are you looking for? What's the story you want to do? Early on in training camp, that's a big story. Can he be that, can he be that guy? Because to build a roster, you've got to have a few guys that you don't get through the draft emerge as guys who are Pro Bowl guys, who are guys that you're building your team around. And from what you hear, they think that, that he might fit that bill.
Yeah, and you've got and I'm going to skip number 4 just for a minute, go to number 5 on your list, and you've got Rashad Jennings, and very clear as to why you said that, and that, you need to take some of the pressure off of Maurice. And instead of him at your number 5 spot, because I really thought that Rashad last year really showed the, hey, I'm ready for this. Okay. I'm ready to be the guy for Maurice. I'm ready to handle more responsibility. My number 5 would be Zach Miller. And it would be from the standpoint of it's also on him and want to see him get better, but also to have Dirk Koetter find more of a role
right.
for Zach Miller in the offense. And I know last year from talking to Dirk, he said it was very difficult because he wasn't healthy.
Right.
We didn't have him. We didn't know if we were going to have him. So it's hard to develop packages or game plans for a guy that you're not sure is going
to
be there.
And you have to be available. Especially when you're trying to work your way into an offense.
But to me, Zach Miller could be on both of those lists.
Sure.
The injured guys that must do better this year and come back and contribute, but also this list and that they've got to do more. Your number 4 was Derek Cox. I agree with that totally. Is he going to be a guy that they're going to be looking to replace and get better?
Right.
Or is he going to be a guy that they say, we're good there? We don't need a guy there.
I'm not sure they know that yet, do they?
No, I don't think they do. Certainly I think last year throws up a lot of question marks. I know that Gene Smith really believes in him. And I don't. The coaching staff certainly didn't have that same belief.
Right.
Last year when he had.
And he's one of the good guys, too. He's one of the guys will work at it.
But played better in the second half of the season, from what I understand.
He played better. I mean,
two interceptions in Dallas.
Then
he had the
fantastic game.
Broke up that pass in the game in Tennessee where he broke on the route in front of Kenny Britt at midfield that would have tied the game there in the third quarter. And he made a beautiful leaping knockdown play on it. And that's where he went, oh, whoa, okay. This guy's got the ability to make it. But those are the only few plays from last year that you can really talk about with him.
Yeah, and how is the coaching staff's view of him? Because clearly last year they lost confidence
right.
in him. Will that confidence come back? And, I think certain experiences harden a player. And last year Derek Cox became a hardened player after going through that.
And some guys, in the Ozone, I got some questions about that. Did that hurt Derek Cox? Did the coaching staff make a bad move doing that? And my response was, sometimes guys need that early in their careers. It's okay to go through a period like that if you come out of it on the other side, improve from it. It doesn't make you a bad player.
Yeah, well, before that, I guess, moment you could say when he got benched, Derek was always kind of wide-eyed, you know, good to see you, you know, happy to be here.
Right.
And after he went through that, he became a little bit more of a businessman, a little bit, and that's okay.
Right. That's what, right.
Sometimes that's what they need. But he definitely became a hardened player, and if you're going to be a cornerback in the NFL, you got to be hardened.
Anyone else, you know, on the cusp of that list, who was 6, 7, or 8 in your?
I'm just happy Jeff liked the story. I mean,
I loved it.
He wasn't real fond of the top 10 list, so it, you know, right. Maybe I scored some points.
Yeah. No, you've earned a merit raise on the show.
I mean, you know, the reality with this, you know, with this roster is there's a lot of guys who fit this, and that's how it should be when you're in essentially the third year
of rebuilding.
You should have, you know, what they really need is they need 3 or 4 guys who aren't on this list to kind of come along and be guys that by week 4 or 5 you're going, oh, maybe this guy can, you know, do something. Maybe this guy can contribute. And the good teams that draft well and do free agency well have 3 or 4 of those guys that by next off season we're all going, boy, we didn't, you know, we weren't thinking about this guy last, you know, March.
I'll give you some names. I mean, on offense, Jarrett Dillard. I mean, he's a guy. You know, mm-hmm. Was he on your other list?
He didn't quite make it only because he hadn't been – it was hard for me, not having seen much of the team,
mm-hmm.
to have much of a feel for what he's going to mean.
So Jarrett Dillard could be a guy, in my opinion. Safety, not Don Carey.
Courtney Green.
Austin Lane. I mean, that's the beauty of this roster. It's full of guys like that right. you're ready to see take the developmental step and help this team get better.
And oftentimes third-year guys do that.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great night, everybody. Talk to you next week.